Good morning. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So you got my friend there.
Yeah. She knows what she likes.
She knows what she likes. That's good. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah. How was your week? What was a highlight? Give me a highlight from this week.
Highlights from the week. My neighbors across the street, I call them my adopted parents. Yes. They're a couple, you know, 20 plus years older than Amy and I. And we just love them to death. We go out to dinner with them. We do wine with them. They took us out for our anniversary to a beautiful steak place called Roost Chris.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice place.
Yeah, I've never been there before. It was my first Roost Chris experience.
Wow.
They're amazing. So anyway, they've been very supportive of me and my magic business. They bought an ST501 a few years ago. And Rita has a paralegal named Glenda, and so she hooked me up with her, and I think she's going to buy a machine and do the business.
Oh, nice.
That's exciting. So I'm putting her on the water today. She wants to have like a week's experience because her sister had a really positive experience with the water, and then she didn't buy the machine. She's like, no, Glenda, you should do the business. So anyway, it's an opportunity that I'm looking forward to exploring. My professional tennis buddy is hooking me up with three different pros.
Nice.
Azarenka, who used to be number one in the world as a woman's number one woman tennis player, and then Jack Sock is one of the best men's American tennis players in the world, and then his brother as well. Jack has dealt with cramping. He's had to bow out of events because of cramping, and so we're going to sit down and, you know, show him how this is going to affect that. And I have a really powerful testimony myself for cramping. I was a major cramper. Every time I play a volleyball tournament, that night I would lose both my hamstrings, you know, my legs would lock up. And it just hasn't happened in 3.5 years. You know,
it's amazing.
It went away. Yeah, it's incredible. So that's a good one. And then, you know about my Arbon friend, Christy. I'm getting her and Debbie led me to Christy. My friend Erica, who's been drinking the water for over 10 years, she led me to Debbie, who bought the machine a month ago. So I'm doing her first cleaning on Thursday and getting together with Christy. And so we're having lunch. I'm taking them both out to lunch. And then Debbie and I are going through her list of people to help. And then Christy and I are going to really kind of lay out our game plan for being.
So Debbie's the Arbon? Debbie's the Arbon?
Christy's the Arbon.
Christy's the Arbon. Okay. Who's the one that had the artist studio? You were going to go meet with her.
Yeah, I haven't made it up there yet. She has been less than responsive. I'm sure she's busy running a business.
Yeah.
So she hasn't responded to my voicemails. So we don't have anything on the calendar yet. But I haven't given up on her. She's too fantastic to ignore.
Yeah, absolutely. Ashley. Yeah.
Yeah, she is. She's someone I'm going to pursue. But just in a, you know, I you know. There's always that fine line between being pushy and just being persistent.
Yeah. Yeah. Being persistent, but professional.
Yeah.
Crossing that line. I know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once she understands the global mission, how it just aligns with all of her values and meets some of these young entrepreneurs that I work with. Oh my gosh. I think it's going to be a fantastic thing. So,
and I could see her creating Kangen art, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It'll be amazing. That'll be really amazing. You know,
I learned about a CRM tool. Do you use a CRM tool for your list?
Yeah, I've been using different ones. Which one did you find?
This one is called Streak, and it's for free. Oh. And Colton just absolutely loves it. And it was impressive looking in the webinar. So you have to access it through your browser. Has to be, I think, Google Chrome.
Chrome, yeah.
Firefox. So I'm having trouble downloading it properly, but I'm going to try to get that figured out because it looks like a really powerful tool.
Well, you can have more than one browser. I have like four browsers.
I'm not talking about that you can't have more than one browser. I'm saying that this tool is compatible
more with Chrome.
Couldn't download it using Firefox.
Got it.
Oh, that's cool. It has a compatibility issue.
Right. Got it.
All right. So
that's cool.
And then one of my Friday guys, my Friday group, there's some really good potential there. George, a guy named George Roth, said he wants to buy it and he wants to buy it cash. So that's good. Jim Pinto says he wants to buy one as well.
Wow. So things are moving.
Yeah. And then a new guy who's been there three times is a really young guy, dresses like very in like suit and tie every time I see him. His name's Cameron, and he is I think he's on the more like on the finance side.
Right.
And he wants to sit down and talk about how we can support one another. So
oh wow. Things are good.
Yeah. There's some good stuff going on. It's that's why I need a CRM tool, because I feel like my list is big and it's starting to
starts to get all over the place.
I feel without some kind of better organization I'm missing out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the challenge, to find a good CRM. But then you end up like, if you got a text list, it's one, and then you have a CRM, which is like, you know, you gather the information, and then so I always find I'm ending up managing many lists anyway, but it's always good to have it. Like, so my main list is really in my phone. You know, I'm using contacts, you know, right in the phone. But
how do you use your phone to organize your list? And do you use Memo, or do you use an app, or what do you use?
No, just using contacts, because you can put them in groups and all of that.
So you group in your contacts.
Yeah. You know, and I do sync it, even though I'm an Apple guy. I do sync it with Google. You know, my calendar's sunk with, you know, I have a Google calendar, syncs with that too. So, I mean, all the connectivity is there, you know, but, yeah, it's always, you know, how do you gather the information so that it's in one place? There's a lot of good platforms out there, but I'm going to check out Streak, you know.
Yeah, it looked, it was like a series of tabs across the, you know, where you could open up different windows. It's almost like, it reminded me of an Excel, not a really Excel spreadsheet, but anyway, it looked really good.
Yeah, I'm sure it goes Google.
Everything, of course. And,
yeah, Google puts out a lot of, it was interesting because years ago I was the president of the Hastings and Hudson Chamber of Commerce for a couple of years. And a guy that I met through, he was on an event committee that we were working on. And he, at the time, was CEO of Kenneth Cole. You know, Kenneth Cole Productions, Kenneth Cole. Yeah. And he had been CEO of a lot of big corporations at that level. So it was kind of cool to sit down with him. And I mean, it's interesting because he started out as a tech guy, like an IT type of guy. But then he went into marketing, you know, and then became CEO and, you know, was, you know. So he's high up, makes a lot of money. And it was interesting because when he sat down with me and we were talking about technology, and he had an Android or whatever it was. And he said, he lifted it up and he said, what Google gives us for free today would have cost a company a minimum of $10,000 to set up, minimum as a baseline. And Google gives it all for free now. And you can have it all on your phone. He said, it's just absolutely amazing where technology has come. It just makes life a lot easier, you know? Especially
they say that our phone is more powerful than the computer that took the first guys to the moon.
Yeah.
And it filled a room.
Yeah, it filled a room. It's crazy stuff. I mean, I remember, you know, the first mainframe computers when I was in school, you know, was punch cards and all this stuff. And it was like, yeah, it filled the room. You know, and you had terminals that plugged into the mainframe. What's that?
I remember punch cards.
Punch cards, right? Learn to code, right? It's like punch cards. Crazy stuff. Yeah. MS-DOS, you know, the early days. MS-DOS and all of that. Crazy stuff.
And then if you drop the cards and they're out of order, then it doesn't even work.
Yeah. Then you're screwed. Then you're screwed. Yeah. No, life is so much easier today. It really is. In that aspect. And I know a lot of people that they just didn't get into that technology wave, and they just feel completely lost. It's like they don't even do email, or, you know, it's like, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to break the computer. I'm like, you got to get in there.
Yeah, the old fart that sort of MCs our Friday meeting, he doesn't email.
No, doesn't. And what was strange is, like, you know, and here I was the president of the Chamber of Commerce. So I'm like, I'm trying to bring like marketing ideas and all this stuff, free stuff, you know. And it's like the first challenge is how do you communicate with them? Because some of them didn't even have email. They have storefronts, right? And they have storefronts for 20 years, but they never did email. I'm like, well, how are you building your list? How are you building your community? Because it's not like you can hang a shingle anymore and then the foot traffic's just going to walk in. That's right. Not how business is done anymore. You have to have a list. You have to build your own community and your relationship to them. Oh, no, you know? Anyway. And it was funny because a client of mine at the time, Seth Godin, I don't know if you've ever seen his, he has probably, at one point, he had the third most read business blog in the world, Seth Godin. And
I don't even know his name.
Yeah, look his stuff up. He's written many really good books. He trains, you know, MBAs and, I mean, really high level stuff. And I was trying to recruit him to help me with, you know, with stuff at the chamber. And he was like, you know what? He said, it's like herding cats. He said, I'm not going to do it. And it's like, that's an old Jim Rohn line, you know, it's like herding cats. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you'll see. And then I saw, it was like herding cats. And I was like, okay, I'm done with this. Nobody's listening. They don't really want to change. They just want to sit behind their counters and bitch and moan and, you know, nothing changes.
So speaking of Jim Rohn, I have an interesting guy in my Friday group named Dan McBride, and he is a very deep Christian, and we've met a bunch of times for coffee and breakfast, and we've gotten really close. And I, when we first met, and I had introduced him to Kangen Water, he spoke in this way that's like, oh my gosh, Steve, you know, I already love the network marketing. I've been very successful in network marketing. And I worked personally with Jim Rohn, like I was a partner. Like,
wow.
And so I'm like, wow, this guy, you know, he's like, and he was attracted to my Christian faith because he knew it was very deep and mature, and I knew a lot of the scriptures. And so he loved, you know, wrestling through stuff with me, and he, like, you know, we're going to be like Paul and Barnabas, and I'm thinking we're just going to go all over the world with this thing. And so I put him on the water for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and at the end of the test period, he didn't buy the machine, and he's like, yeah, it's too expensive.
What?
And he's drinking like tap water, and I'm like, are you freaking kidding
me? He comes from that mindset. He comes from that mindset.
His wife is a breast cancer survivor, and so he wasn't coming around the group very much, and he's come twice recently, and so I texted him and said how good it was to see him, and he responded in kind, and then he said, my wife's cancer is back and she's having another surgery and we'll get together after. And I'm like, okay, Jim, maybe you can help me in presenting this to him, but now what is the cost of the machine versus your wife's health? You know, and what, we don't know what could have been prevented. You know, she'd even be dealing with cancer right now. Because this was in the summer. This was early summer when we started sitting down and meeting and talking and doing the water thing. And now it's back. And that's what cancer does. That's what traditional treatment does. It just delays the inevitable.
Yeah. Because what happens is it, you know, and doctors always celebrate it. It's just putting a Band-Aid on it. It makes it go away, but it doesn't get to the root cause of it.
Right.
And if you don't change the internal environment, it's going to come back. And that's why statistically, cancer has a very high, very, very high recurrence rate.
Yeah.
So one way to approach it is just to step back and say, well, what is your dream? What is your vision of a year from now with your wife's health? Right? The same thing that we went, you know, I took you through with the visioning process. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that vision look like for you? You know, your wife is healthy, you know, she's vibrant, she doesn't have cancer anymore, you know. What does that feel like? And really get into that feeling of that, of vibrating at that vision. She's doing, you know, she's really well, we're able to travel again, we're able to be with our family, whatever that vision is for him. And then say something like, you know, what is that vision worth to you? What is that worth to you in not just money, but in happiness and love and everything? What is that worth to you? And then bring him back to the current situation. So if you don't do anything differently now, how do you expect things to be different with her? With her health, because you already went through the cycle of traditional medicine. And if you look statistically, it doesn't have a good track record with this, and cancer recurs. And so if you didn't make a step in the right direction to make a change, then how are you going to realize that vision that you just described? So what is it going to cost you? What is it going to cost your wife? What is it going to cost her health? For you not to make that decision. And if you put it in perspective, it's like, you know, what is your wife's cancer-free body worth to you? It's priceless. Well, then what's $4,000 then? And something that will help change that internal environment.
And for a guy that can afford it, I mean, it's not, you know, it's like you just write a check. I mean,
exactly.
Every one of the guys in this room,
yeah,
can't afford this machine. It's just a matter of not pulling the trigger.
What it is what you're facing with him is a paradigm. And you just have to shift the paradigm by saying, look, you know, just like what I described, where do you want to go? This is where you are. This is where you want to go. And if you don't make any choices to move in that direction, what is it going to cost you not to make that decision? Well, we already saw it. The cancer recurred. It's already starting to come back. And then you're going to go through another round of whatever that treatment was, chemo, radiation. That's brutal. That's brutal. That cost is very, very high. So you love your wife. You want to be with her. You want to see her healthy. Then make a decision to move in the right direction to change that internal environment. Change, you got to shift the paradigm. It's all about paradigms. It has nothing to do with the money. It has to do with the paradigm. And so you could also ask him, he said, if money wasn't an issue, and you know money's not an issue with him, if money was not an issue here, would you buy the machine? Would it be a resounding yes? You would buy the machine right now if money was not an issue. You got to get that first yes. Because if the money wasn't an issue, and yes, this is something that he wants, well, then you're moving in the right direction then. Then you're moving. So you got to bust up. So if money wasn't an issue, what else is then preventing you from buying this machine? And then let something else come up. Because it might just be, you might have to dig a little deeper. Might be another issue that comes up. And then you bust up that paradigm. And you reframe it. Okay, if that, you know, I don't have the kitchen space or whatever, something stupid, right? Well, yeah. If you had the kitchen space, right? You, the money was not an issue. You had the kitchen space. What else would prevent you from buying this machine? You just keep digging deeper because it may not be the money issue. It could be something else. you know, well, I don't know if this is really going to help her. What if it is? We've got doctors, we've got science behind it, you know? So just, you have to dig deeper, get into the paradigm, and then just bust up the paradigm. So yeah. The best way to do it is to isolate it by saying, okay, what if money is not the issue? Money, what if you have all the money in the world, money was not the issue? What then would prevent you from buying this machine? So you isolate it, you box it. What else? What else is coming up for you? And then, you know, or you could say, you know, where are you in the process of buying the machine? Oh, I'm at a 7. You know, from a 0 to, you know, 1 to 10, I'm at a 7. What do I need to do to help you move to a 10? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we need to do together? Let's lock arms together. What do we need to do to get to a 10? And if it's, oh, the money. Okay. If money wasn't an issue, if somebody handed you a check for $25,000, it wasn't an issue, is this something you would this be a resounding yes? Or is there something else that would prevent you from buying the machine? So, yeah. So just, I know it's frustrating because I know people that are multi-millionaires and they want, you know, there's one guy who's literally close to a billionaire, owns property everywhere. It took probably almost a year, and he was referred through a doctor, and it took almost a year before he bought the machine because he said it was too expensive. And this guy probably, you know, would spend $4,000 on, you know, a weekend, you know, but it was just putting that in perspective. So anyway, it's crazy stuff, crazy stuff. All right. So let's talk about, so last week, we were getting into forgiveness, right? And looking at people's behaviors, you know, in relation to us, or just, you know, looking at people. So every act is an act of love. So it's either somebody expressing love or calling for love, right? So, and no matter how unskillful it is. So if we can keep that perception, then it's a little bit easier to, you know, to start to work, move into the forgiveness. And so forgiveness is really a shift in perception in ourselves. Doesn't mean that we condone, doesn't mean that we, you know, we say we accept what another person has done. It's just it's a shift in perception in ourselves so that we can free up that energy to move toward our dream, toward our, you know, it gives us more creative energy to express who we are. You know, we talked a lot about that, and I know with the training, you know, we'll get into that. And it's a process. It is a process, just like we talked about last time. What did Jesus say? You know, we forgive 7 times. He said, no, 70 times 7 times. It's a daily practice. It's a daily process, like brushing your teeth, you know, 2 or 3 times a day, like taking a shower. It's something we do every single day, or we should anyway. It's a daily practice. It's a daily practice. And just like what Rumi, you know, the philosopher Rumi, he described, which is really interesting. He described, he said, there's a place where our souls are just fine. Right? So we could see somebody, maybe they hurt us, they betrayed us or something, but there is a common place where we're all fine, where we're all good. He said, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field and I will meet you there. So that's that humanness, that field of that connects us all, right? The field of love, the field of abundance, the field of God, the Holy Spirit. It's where we all connect. So separating the person from the behavior, we can recognize that field. There is commonality there. And this week, you know, you heard the story about the Dalai Lama and sacred friends.
I don't understand what the sacred. What a sacred friend, or if it was a sacred friend, I didn't understand the distinction.
So if, you know, everyday friends are friends that we have in our lives. They do something that upsets us. You know, they're late for an appointment, or, you know, they gossiped about us and, you know, it wasn't true. Those are things that we can, you know, more readily forgive. It's like, you know, those littler, smaller things that we can forgive. a sacred friend, the way he describes it. So his sacred friend is the government of China for what they have done historically and continue to do to the Tibetan people. I mean, torture and kill people, you know, for just having their religion.
Why would that be described as a friend of any kind, let alone sacred?
Well, so he's describing it as a sacred friend because a sacred friend is much harder to forgive. But it's something, it's a relationship of forgiveness that will grow your compassion in your heart. And so his point was, is that his heart wouldn't be so big and compassionate if he didn't forgive his sacred friends. So it's like that story I think I told last time of there was that terrorist attack in the, at the hotel in Mumbai in India. And this woman, it was an American woman, and she lost her, her son, her only son, and her husband. And, you know, the journalists came and they were interviewing, how do you feel about this? And she was just at peace and they couldn't believe it. And she just, she chose to forgive them. And so in that moment, I would call them sacred friends because it's like, it would be hard to even conceive them as being friends, somebody that killed your loved ones, right? But he's saying at that level, it's a sacred friend. And to be able to step into that forgiveness, not condone what they did, but forgive them on that level to make the shift inside her. Because it could consume you, right? I mean, especially if something happened, you lost a loved one. It could consume you to the point of destroying your life, right? And we see it in teenagers and they get bullied and all this stuff. So the bullies, to me, would be a sacred friend. I don't know if you've ever experienced being bullied, you know, as a kid. I know I have. I mean, a lot of people do. And it's those people are much harder to forgive. So, for instance, in the story that Mary told about Jack Boland and his brother-in-law, here's a family member he was doing business with, and he got basically thrown under the bus. I don't know all the backstory to it, but he basically ripped him off. I mean, in a big way, threw him under a bus and basically disappeared. And Jack Bowen was left holding the bag of this business deal. And he had to make good on it, but the brother-in-law disappeared. I mean, he basically left him, not left him for dead, but left him almost like for financially dead. Mm-hmm. And that whole process was very difficult. And he rehearsed that pain because, and I didn't really understand this until in really the depth of it. Cause I know like, Bernie Siegel talks about it in his books. He's an MD. He talks about, a lot of people find value in their pain. They find value in the story because you will always find somebody to commiserate with you. You will always find somebody to support that. So it's like, oh, I got cancer again, or I'm sick again, or I'm, you know, I can't find, you know, the love of my life again. And I got ripped off again. You will always find somebody to support that and give you some kind of, you know, you'll find somebody that will buy into that and give you support for that. And Bernie Siegel talks about that from a health point of view, that some people find value in being sick, find value in being in pain, even though it's not really serving them. And you see from a distance, it's like, well, why would you want to be sick all the time? But they can find camaraderie or they can find support for that, some kind of value. And so Jack Boland said that too about his brother-in-law. He would always, he could always find somebody. He rehearsed that story for years that, oh, I got ripped off and blah, blah, blah. You know, we get into the details of the story. But then he realized that it wasn't serving him because he didn't even know where his brother-in-law was. He hadn't seen him in years. The whole situation had resolved. It was in the past, but yet he was still holding on to this resentment, this unforgiveness. And so that was a sacred friend for him because what he did was just, you know, inconceivable that a family member would do that. And so then that's why he went through that practice of, okay, Let me get into a state of love. Well, how do I do that? Let me think about my son when he was a child and us playing together, and he got into this vision and he raised the vibration to love. And then he said, okay, well, now once I'm in that vibration, let me now bring the face of my brother-in-law in there, right? Because now you're bringing this unforgiveness, this hurt into a field of love. And in the beginning, it was hard because all of a sudden, boom, the vibration would come right down, boom, oh, this guy's a scoundrel, I can't stand his face. And it was hard for him. But he said, you know what, but that energy is still in me. It's still blocking me from being free of this. And so he kept practicing it over and over and over again. You know, another day you bring up the memory of his son, and he's in this field of love, and then he would bring in the face of his brother-in-law. And little by little, yeah, there was a contraction, but it wouldn't go all the way down, right? It would still vibrate at love. And then he got to the point where he would actually replace, it would actually replace his son's face with the face of his brother-in-law, his ex-brother-in-law. And then imagine him as a child. And then his heart opened and he forgave. And the test of that came one day when he stopped at a stoplight and a brand new Cadillac pulled up next to him, and he looks over and he realizes it's his ex-brother-in-law driving the car. And he said, wow, he looks like he's doing well and I wish him well. And it was just an automatic response that came out of him. None of that resentment, none of that unforgiveness, none of that was there. And he realized that he was able to forgive his sacred friend. He was able to his heart was now bigger. He felt more compassionate. Didn't forgive, you know, I mean, didn't condone what happened. What happened, it happened. We're not erasing it. We're not saying, you know, I'm a doormat for accepting what happened. No. The forgiveness is a practice for ourselves, to open that up for ourselves. So we don't have that resentment. Like, you know, I mean, I could still think of people in my past. And when I think of them, oh, it's like, oh, that son of a gun, you know, it's like, it comes up. It's like, oh, all right, now I got to work on that. And that's what some of these exercises this week was like, who are those people? Even just regular people, doesn't have to be sacred friends. Who are those people that betrayed us, that hurt us, that, you know, did something that was just not good? And are we still holding on to unforgiveness because of that? Mm-hmm. Right? It's a spiritual practice. It's a spiritual practice. And that's what Jesus taught us too. It's like something you're going to go back to over and over and over again until you get to that place where, oh, I wish him well. I wish them well. So does that make clear the sacred friend, that level of sacred friends are somebody that's done really something really horrible, right? You know, like murdering people, killing people. I mean, something at that level, or just betraying you, stabbing you in the back, or betraying you on such a high, high level. Those are our sacred friends. They're the ones that challenge us to forgive and to release that within us, you know. And those are big. Those are big, you know. You know, so it also builds the muscle of compassion, just like that the story Mary told this week, and I think I touched on it last week, where she was, you know, checking out. She bought groceries. She's checking out, and the checker overcharged her for an item. And then she's like going back and forth, and the woman's slamming stuff down and being like, I mean, Emily's like going to the post office, right? It seems to happen with government employees sometimes, but it's like, they're just rude, right? They're just like, well, if you don't want to be here, then don't be here, you know, get somebody else that will help me, you know? And then you just come at it with like, you know, the son of a gun, who is this person, blah, 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 blah. But you don't know what they bring to the table. You don't know what that story is. And so it was the guy who, you know, was packing her bags that helped her out to the car that said, oh, well, her son, you know, was riding a bike, got hit by a car, and he's in a hospital, but she had to come to work today and she'd rather be at the hospital with him. And it instantly changed her, you know, this feeling of to compassion.
Yeah.
And that got her thinking, saying, well, can we skip that step of being and just say, go to the step of compassion, saying there is a story there, right? There's a reason that people may be behaving that way. So let's just be compassionate and open to that. You know, and again, not put yourself in a position of harm or, you know, to be bullied or to be, you know, to be betrayed or hurt again, but to say, okay, there's something here. There's something behind it that is causing it. And so they're either looking for love or they're expressing love, but something is happening here. And it may be unskillful in the moment, but if we can go to that compassion, again, that keeps us open, keeps us vibrating at that higher level. And who we are, who is what we get, is what we get. So who are some of the, doing the exercises, did you recall some of those people that you still have unforgiveness?
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have them. And did it bring up, I mean, some of them are probably stronger than others, but did it bring up that, like, you just bring up their just the memory of them, and it's like, right? It's pretty instant. So just think of how much energy, or even just think of it like the way Mary puts it. It's like having your computer and you have so much, just so much hardware space, you know, so much disk space. So if you're holding this big file of unforgiveness, how much disk space is that taking up? How much energy is it consuming just to keep that?
Yeah.
Right? Instead of saying, okay, let me resolve that, my relationship to it. Right? It's like somebody in your past that hurts you, and then they pass away. They're dead. They're not even here with us anymore. But you're still holding on to that energy of unforgiveness. Well, certainly not serving them because they're not even here with us. It's just taking away from us. So coming to terms with that, coming to that place of compassion and forgiveness. It's for us not to be poisoned with that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a process. That's a process. So how are those exercises going through that for you?
I don't know. I didn't resonate with exercises this week as much as I had hoped.
Ah, so that's interesting. So what could that mean?
I don't know.
Could that be a paradigm of because paradigms, they we have clues when the paradigms come up, right? One, we call it the 3 D's. So one is distraction or procrastination, right? So it distracts us from doing it. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'll just do it later. I know that happens to me all the time. So that's one way our paradigms come up. Another way is dissuasion. You know, so it's like, oh, I want to do this. It's like, oh, you don't need to do that. You know, you don't really need to do that. You know, what's the point of doing that? And then the third way is, and this is what happened to me last week, is disaster, or DEFCON 3, as we say. It's like there's something physically happens. There's an emotional response. There's a physical response. You get into a car wreck. And for me last week, because we had started this team class, right? Remember I told you? Really intense, going every single morning. And then on Friday, I twisted not one ankle, but both ankles in the class. Okay? We were doing like part of the circuit. And I had done the exercise before. It was like, you know, the half balls. It's flat on the bottom. It's half ball. So we were doing laterals over it. You go up, you go on the ball, you go off the ball, and you're going back and forth. So I get up, you know, is that toward the end of the class? So I'm, you know, it's at the end of the week. So I'm, you know, tired, I'm sore, I'm exhausted. I'm like, all right, we're going to do this. So I go, and my left foot goes over, right foot hits the ball at the wrong angle, and my right ankle twists out, and I went right down, hit the mat. And I was like, oh, man. And, you know, the coach comes over and says, all right. Yeah. I said, yeah. I said, my ankle just twisted out. It feels okay. So then I get up and I'm on the left side, the right side of the ball, and I try to do it again, and my left foot hits the ball slightly off center, and my left foot goes out and I hit the mat again, like within 30 seconds of each other. And Caroline was right next to me, and she saw me go down the second time, and the second time was worse than the first time. So now I was like, holy crap. But I finished the class. At the end, we did this running five loops with this obstacles and all this stuff. And it was like, I just wanted to finish strong. Then I was like, okay, now I got to go home. And I'm like, I'm soaking it at 11.5. I'm putting arnica and oils. And I've got ankle bracelets, you know, braces on and stuff like that. I said, I'm going to get back. And that's a paradigm. Because I want to have that body image, that the healthy body that I always wanted. And then, boom, what happens? Twist my ankles. That's a paradigm. That's a disaster that my paradigm caused. And I recognize that. So it's like, you know what? I'm going to do everything I can to get my ankles back in shape, get them strong, and I'm going to be back in class. And I've been walking. I've still been doing exercises here. I haven't gone back to the intensity of the class. And we leave for Dallas today, so we won't be back in class till Monday. But I'm not going to let those paradigms stop me.
Well, the true lesson that you should be taking away from this.
What's that?
Is don't do laterals on a freaking ball.
Don't do laterals on a ball. And the other thing too is I had the wrong footwear.
You're asking for disaster when you put a round ball.
I know.
Platform on it and then try to do laterals across it. Seriously, it's only crazy. A matter of time until your ankles snap.
They're gonna snap. I know. It's crazy.
Do things that are safer. Produce the same results without such a high percentage of injury risk.
Yeah, I know. I get that too.
Seriously.
I know.
That's the problem with these boot classes and CrossFit. It seems that they constantly put their members at risk.
Mm.
They're trying to do too much, too fast, too many reps, and it's only a matter of time until you compromise your form. And you blow out your back, you blow out your ankle, you blow out your shoulder.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I just can't support it.
I hear. But the other thing, too, as I learned, is I had the wrong footwear on. Because the shoes that I'm wearing, it's really running shoes. It's meant to go this way. So
slap a Band-Aid on it. Keep doing it. Just.
I bought CrossFit shoes, and now it's much more stable. I'm not doing the ball. I'm not doing the ball anymore.
You'll be fine. I'll be fine.
No, everything else is fine. It was just that stupid half-round ball. I'm not going to do that anymore. I can do, like you said, I can modify and do the same thing, but not on that stupid ball.
Yep.
So
that ball is only designed for standing on it stably and working your core. That's
your core,
all it's designed for. Don't jump on and off of it. It's just... Oh my God.
Coach Steve, I will listen to you. I will.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Please. I learned my lesson. And now it's like, okay.
You did.
Yeah.
Your verbiage said, I didn't learn a lesson. I'm going to keep doing it.
No, not that. I knew I was going to, I don't like that ball. I'm going to still do the class because everything else was there. I find benefit.
If you, stand on that ball, say you stand on that ball with a dumbbell in each hand.
Right.
And you start doing curls while you're balancing.
Yeah.
It's very unlikely you're going to get hurt. So there is a purpose for that ball, but
not jumping on off
it is not the purpose of that ball.
Especially side to side, like doing
side
lateral.
To side, any which way. No.
No.
You climb on it very carefully and you stay put.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it's for.
And I guess you could flip it upside down, right? And you can balance on the flat side.
Well, that's the way I thought you were using it.
Oh, no. They had it the opposite. They had the round side up, and so you're tapping off the round side. That's why I twisted.
I would just fire them immediately and find a new class.
Find a new class. Get out of here. You're fired. So, anyway, it's not going to stop me from my goals, but I'm not going to do those lateral exercises anymore.
Very happy to hear that.
Good. And I will take your advice. And I forgive the teacher.
Okay.
Since we're talking about forgiveness, I forgive him. Very healthy of me. So what else? So I would encourage you to go back to the exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit with it a little bit and see what comes up. Because there might be some stuff there that you may be either avoiding or your paradigm might be saying, well, there's not really anything here. Because I find that too with myself and with some people. that if I'm avoiding something, then there's a reason why I'm avoiding it, you know, or don't want to look at it, go into it a little deeper. Because I have some clients that they go, oh yeah, the exercise is really easy. I just went through it. It's like, really? You didn't find that this part challenging? And they're like, no, I've done all that already. I'm like, okay. And then a little bit later down the line, they'll go, oh, now I know what that meant. Now I know what that meant. So the work continues. The work continues. So coming up, so for next week, it's audio 17. We're starting to go into, because next week is 8. So 8, we're going into phase 3, which is now we're building, right? So we did the blueprinting. We got through some of this, you know, we got through the bridging part, bridging the gap, the stuff that comes up, the challenges we'll face. And now we start to get into the building part where we start to really put structure together and start to build. But keeping in mind all these tools and resources that we've learned and keeping our perception and our, you know, this, our paradigms are going to come up and they're going to challenge us. And just keeping that in our mind. So be aware, notice what we're noticing and stay aware of that. Because we don't want that, you know, things are starting to flow and we don't want that to be blocked. So with phase 3, there's the phase 3 meditation. You can listen to that, start to listen to that every day. So that's part of your life work this next few weeks. The phase 3 meditation. And a lot of the stuff that we talked about in the gap, we're going to go through again, but from a different, slightly different perspective on it. So we're going to use that as tools of growth. You'll see that. You'll see that as it starts to unfold. All right. Mm-hmm. So you have any other questions before we sign off?
No. Next Wednesday is Halloween.
Oh my gosh, already? Let me just pull this up. Yeah, next week is Halloween, so I expect you to be in costume.
And I expect the same of you.
Well, I'm going to be, I'll be dressed as a coach. No, you don't do Halloween?
Yeah, I like Halloween. I have a closet full of costumes.
You really? Well, you're already wearing your orange shirt, so you could just even take a magic marker and put like a...
Amy and I have a friend who we used to play tennis with quite a bit, and her and her husband get into it. They have a beautiful home in Huntington Beach, and they throw a bash, like...
Wow.
All out, 100 plus people.
Wow.
They usually hire a DJ. The garage is fully converted into a dance area.
Wow. Light,
smoke, and I mean, it's off the chart.
Wow.
Seriously. Last year was her 50th birthday, and she canceled the Halloween thing and did a masquerade ball on her birthday, which is like New Year's Eve.
Oh, have fun.
And that was a lot of fun. So we kind of lost touch because we're not playing much tennis. And she's like a friend of my friend Frank, who is really one of the guys. He's one of my sacred friends that... You know, we've basically just sort of lost touch. I think I've told you about Frank and Erica, how they don't go to church anymore, and they
a little bit, yeah.
He just sort of walked away from it. Said that pastors are hypocrites. And I'm just like, yeah, well, so am I, so are you. You know, he's just a man up there doing his best.
Yeah.
Trying to bring the word of God to people.
Yeah.
You know, and
The devil comes to steal, right? And so the devil's doing his work.
The ramifications, the ripple effect are that his daughters have basically grown up not going to church. Yeah. Yeah. And his parents are just, you know, totally devastated. You know, they're, his dad was practically a pastor. He was like the principal of the Christian school that, elementary school that he went to. And so, yeah, his life has definitely taken a weird turn. You know, it's like, I met him when I was 19 and he was 20, and we were going to the same church. We just immediately bonded on water skiing and volleyball. And those were our big passions back then in our early 20s. And, you know, we just became best friends immediately. And all through my 20s and 30s, you know, there was nobody I was closer to than Frank. And then he married Erica at 25, and the three of us were thick as thieves. And then when I married Amy at 43, it all just sort of fell apart. Erica and Amy didn't really bond the way I'd hoped. And we started playing tennis together, and then Erica walked away from tennis. And then Frank seemed to have this midlife crisis where he just started partying. He just wanted to drink and party. I just was so unattracted to that lifestyle. You know, he started collecting friends that were into that. And it just, I tell Amy, you know, if I met Frank today, we probably wouldn't be friends. You know, I mean, just, there's nothing about his lifestyle that I'm attracted to. You know, he's given up all sports. You know, he's not playing tennis, not playing volleyball. He got into motorcycles. So he and Erica go like on a ride every Sunday. I am not going to buy a motorcycle. I'm not going to ride a motorcycle.
Right.
Once again, much like jumping on and off of a round ball, the odds of getting hurt are very high. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. At some point you're going down. How bad is it? Do you sprain an ankle or do you snap your leg off? Or do you die? You know, it's not at all something for me. So
yeah,
he loves it. You know, that's great. You know, he's ridden to Canada.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's serious about this stuff, but you know, I literally haven't spoken with Erica since 2016.
Wow.
And Frank and I, our relationship is a couple of text messages, around our birthday, and
you know,
once in a while we say hi, and it's just it is you know, he's definitely one of the people that I carry around a lot of resentment. You know, it's, he's one of my one of my people.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I don't know. I can't fix it. I don't know how. I mean, I haven't tried really. Because I get so irritated by the whole thing. But it's...
Yeah. But sometimes you don't need to fix it. It's just something that you've had in the past. I mean, sometimes people come into our lives for a season, right?
Yeah, he wasn't the season guy. He was a lifer. He was my very, very best friend.
Yeah, I know. And
he was in my life for over 20 years.
No, I get it.
We had business together, and then that went away.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Most of my, you know, over 20 years, it was.
Yeah.
Very intertwined.
So that's some work there that you can work on. One of your sacred friends, right?
Yeah.
So. Because this, whatever it is, whatever you label it, resentment or hurt, that you're carrying around with you is not affecting him at all. It's not. because the time has passed. You know, it's not affecting him. He's, you know, it's only affecting you.
Yeah.
So it's to come, you know, come to recode that part of it, you know, see it for what it was, you know, see the benefit you got from it, what you learned, you know, the memories that you shared. Because I'm sure something out of 20 years of friendship has made you who you are today. Mm-hmm. Right. And so take that with you, but leave the resentment. Just recode the resentment or whatever that feeling is. Because it's only taking away from your spirit. It's taken away from your hard drive, right? Yeah. And you're not the same person you were 20 years ago when you first, you know, or however long ago. And he's not the same person either, because life is a river. It's always changing. Things are always shifting. So, you know, be grateful for that. Be grateful for what you learned and what you shared, but you're different people now. Just like you said, if you met him now, you wouldn't necessarily hang out with him.
I met him 35 years ago. Oh my gosh.
35 years ago, right? So, but get to the place where you could just bless him. Hey, I hope he's doing well, you know, and let go of the rest, or just reframe the rest, you know, just like we did when you were like, oh, I feel like a college dropout. Well, just you reframed it. Well, that was a stepping stone. That was an awakening.
Yeah.
So it's a different way, to different perspective, because that's what forgiveness is about, is perspective. It's just changing the perspective on it. Change the way you look at it. And you can change it into something that's much more powerful. Mm-hmm. Right? So. And it's a practice. And it's something that, you know, it's an exercise you need to do, you know, several times. It's not going to happen once. It's not like, okay, flip a switch, I'm done. You know, boom, move on. It's something that happens over time. You know, like healing of my ankles. It's something that happens over time. Yeah. All right, man. So, Halloween, same time, same bat channel.
Okay.
Costumes. At least on some kind of, I have to write a note. I have some kind of accessory.
All right.
All right, man. Good to see you. Enjoy the week. And
yeah, you as well.
All righty. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
All right, bye.
Bye.